Hi there, my name is Abel James with FatBurningMan.com, and thanks so much for stopping by. Today I'm excited to be here with Mira and Jason Calton, who are authors of the best-selling book Naked Calories and doing some incredibly important work in the world of nutrition. And today we're going to be talking about their six-year journey to over 100 countries in search of the secrets to permanent health, and some of the real reasons behind widespread and dangerous health crises of the 21st century, like heart disease, cancer, osteoporosis, diabetes, and obesity, as well as why you should consider eating eyeballs from time to time. All right, you ready? Here we go. Thanks so much for joining us today. We're here with Mira and Jason Calton, and they're authors of the best-selling book, Naked Calories, and they encourage their readers and clients to achieve micronutrient sufficiency to prevent chronic disease and achieve optimal health. And so Mira, at just 30 years old, suddenly found herself with the bone density of an 80-year-old woman and hobbled by advanced osteoporosis that made it almost impossible to walk. After a thorough search for natural solutions, she met Jason. He worked his magic, and just 2 years later, Mira's condition was almost completely reversed. So Mira, that's an amazing story. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I went from absolutely being so devastated. I think it was the one time I had absolutely nothing to say was when the doctor sat me down and just told me that it was never going to get any better and that I was going to just break more as I got older.
Yeah.
And then I had to be on medications. And then to find a solution and to be able to reverse it in only 2 years without any medications, all natural. It really, I mean, you don't really love your life until you know that you weren't going to live that life or not going to be able to enjoy it. So it changed everything.
So what happened exactly?
Well, I was an unhealthy person, I guess. Mm-hmm. From the outside, you would have looked at me and thought, you know, she's thin. She goes to hip hop dance class every day. She's running around town in her stilettos, going out every night. But what I wasn't thinking about is what was my nutrition? I ate the same things every day, like many people do. They get stuck in ruts. Mm-hmm. And my weight was good, so I was thinking I was doing the right thing. I'd wake up in the morning and have a diet muffin, and I'd have a spinach salad for lunch, and then I'd reheat whatever was left for my Chinese food and reorder. And that was my basic diet. It was anything I could get my hands on in order to get back to work.
Right.
And, you know, it just wasn't healthy.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I encounter a lot and try to address is the difference between what is thought to be healthy and how that's divorced from reality, what is actually healthy. So what were some of the things that were unhealthy that you thought were healthy?
A spinach salad, things that were labeled diet,
right?
Anything, prepackaged, no calorie salad dressing that is fat free.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things all those convenience foods that you can get down. You can look at the back. I would look at the back of a package, and if it was under, say, 300 calories, I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing.
Right.
And then I went to the gym, which was, I mean, we love fitness. But I was at the gym taking dance class once, twice, three times a day just to burn off those calories. And, you know, you had to be a size, you know, zero or two in New York in order to really, and I was in fashion, PR.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I was really much more worried about my looks than how I was feeling until it got way too late.
So Jason, this is what walked into your office, I guess. What did you do? What was your magic that you worked?
Well, you know, I was surprised. I was really surprised. You know, I had been working with clients for over 12 years already, but I hadn't really encountered anyone as young as Mira was who was suffering from osteoporosis to this extent. I mean, advanced osteoporosis. So, you know, right off the bat, we knew that the diet was a faulty one. But what we wanted to do more than to sit down and talk to her like we may typically with a client and say, well, maybe, you know, where are your carbs? Where are your fats? Where are your proteins? We talk about these macronutrient manipulations, and we try to think sometimes that, well, if I just find the magic ratio of these carbs, fats, and proteins, I'm going to create a healthy diet.
Right.
But what we don't realize is that really is only half of the equation. The other half is no matter what nutritional philosophy we choose to follow, whether it's paleo or low carb or vegan or vegetarian or Mediterranean or you name it, the most important thing we can do for ourselves is to make sure that the foods that we're choosing to eat have the highest micronutrient value. And that's really what we wanted to teach Mira. We said, you know, listen, let's look at that muffin. Do you realize that the first ingredient is enriched white flour? Then they've taken out the fat. They've thrown in artificial flavors, colors, sweeteners, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, you know, things you can't even pronounce on the label. She said, well, what about the spinach salad? That's so good for me. I mean, spinach is great, except for the oxalic acid that strips you of your calcium from 280 grams per 10-ounce bag to 25 grams. Mm-hmm. And then the reheated Chinese food, you know, she's eating white rice and reheating in the microwave over and over and over again. And of course, that stir fry has been, you know, stir fried to death. So we really had her look at those micronutrients and start to say, well, okay, so let's put together a program that we're going to create what we call, and we talk a lot about in the book, and one of the most important terms we use, and that's micronutrient sufficiency.
Yeah, and so given what the average American eats, it's shocking to me that the human body can even survive. You know, it's just not real food. As you say, it's naked calories. What's amazing to me is that your body is so incredible, though, that it can literally turn things like Twinkies into fingernails. But the problem arises over time. It's, you know, as you mentioned in your book, it's leaching vital nutrients from your bones, organs, and the rest of your body. So what actually happens with deficiency?
Well, you know, we like to say that we believe, you know, based on our research and the USDA's published research, we think that micronutrient deficiency is the most widespread and dangerous health condition of the 21st century.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because what people don't realize is that small deficiencies create what we call small holes in what we call the body or the house of optimal health. So if we're just slightly deficient, then we're going to have we're going to get side effects that we sometimes just don't even think about. Maybe we get a headache. Maybe we're not sleeping well. Maybe we're a little, maybe our memory is a little bit foggy, or right, we have a few aches and pains. And so people say, well, if we're so deficient, then why aren't we all just falling around, you know, just dropping dead? But that's because deficiency doesn't work that way. It works by creating small problems for small deficiencies. And then the longer we become deficient, you know, or the more deficient we become over a longer period of time, mm-hmm, then those small holes become large holes. And those are what create these chronic diseases that's crippling America, including heart disease, cancer, osteoporosis, obviously, mm-hmm, like Mira, diabetes, and obesity.
Right. It's amazing to me how few people make the connection between what you're putting in your body and what happens to your body over time.
Right.
But nutrition, obviously, is one of the most important things. In my experience, you know, a few years ago, I was doing things like Mira that I thought were very healthy, but it turns out weren't healthy at all. And it kind of left me miserable and flabby and wondering what the heck was going on. And so skip ahead to a few years later. And now I eat mostly a paleo style diet with a few nuances there. But what I know is that eating real food and eating certain foods in good quality, I'm sure has bumped up my micronutrients quite a bit. And what's happened is all of these little things that I accepted as being a part of who I was or how I aged, you know, like you said, those aches and pains or the puffiness in my face, which is just what happened, right?
Right.
But all those things reversed themselves. And it's hard to know exactly why, but I would imagine it has a heck of a lot to do with micronutrients. So how does that happen when you become sufficient? What happens within the body?
Well, every single micronutrient that is essential has specific functions to perform in your body. So if you are becoming sufficient across the board, then all of these things are going to work synergistically in your body to do all those little minute tasks that it has to do. It's not just, you know, pumping your heart. It's having beautiful hair.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, it's all those extra bonuses that we like to talk about. And you don't even see it coming on. Like you said, when you start eating well, it really is amazing how, first of all, you're not hungry anymore.
Right.
And also your metabolism speeds up. You can maintain your weight eating much larger quantities of food because it actually burns more calories to eat foods that are unprocessed than it does to eat foods that are processed. And a lot of people don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So even eating a processed muffin, although it says it's fewer calories, you're not going to burn as many calories as you would eating a nice whole grain muffin that might be higher in calories because it not being processed is going to make your body work harder and that's going to burn more calories. So it's just an extra bonus.
Right. Yeah. So and it really feels great too, as I'm sure you can attest.
Clean.
Yeah.
Feels like you're running clean.
Exactly. Exactly. So I want to hear a little bit, or you could tell the listeners about your 6-year expedition. You went to over 100 countries looking for how nutrition affects health. So what was your adventure like and what did you learn?
this was so important for us. You know, we had read all the, well, many of the studies, you know, the journal studies. And of course, we've been to school for nutrition and we've done all that. But what we hadn't done is taught, is do something like the Weston A. Price. You know, right. We hadn't actually gotten a chance to go out and sit with, talk with, observe, live with, and just really integrate ourselves into these societies around the world. And we wanted to look at three different things. We wanted to look at really remote areas. We're talking really remote, like Trobriand Islands, Papua New Guinea, or the high, you know, the highest mountains in Tibet, or, you know, in India and China. And then we wanted to look at what we call the in-between areas, the areas that were just now starting to get a little modernization. Maybe they've got electricity. Maybe they have one or two little small stores popping up in their communities. So what was happening there with the lifestyle habits and the nutritional habits? And then we wanted to go, of course, to the urban centers and really do a comparative analysis as to what we were seeing. So this took us 6 years, like you said, to over 100 countries on all seven continents. And what we really found was that as we moved away, and of course, it's probably what a lot of people might theorize, as we move away from the natural diet of those remote areas, right, we start to incorporate these processed foods. We start to see the brightly colored bags, bottles, and boxes kind of starting to infiltrate these in-between areas. And as they do that, we start to see the health of these individuals deteriorate. So it's a complete, you can literally look at as far as the further you move away from that natural mm-hmm. way of eating and the disease rates, they match perfectly. So the remote areas had almost no disease. Some of these places we visited had no idea what cancer was, no idea what diabetes was. There wasn't an obese individual to be seen. The kids had straight teeth and their glowing eyes and perfect skin. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're living in dung huts and they, to right. us, the American, you know, viewpoint, we're looking at it like they have hardship. But health-wise, they're far superior to the modern counterparts.
Yeah, that's amazing. So what are they doing that's, aside from everything, what are they doing that's different, right? What's their typical day look like, I guess, in terms of food that they're putting in their bodies?
Well, first of all, there is no transportation of food. Mm-hmm. So anything that they're going to eat, they're going to pick. And because there's no refrigeration, they're going to eat it right away.
Right.
So you're not losing any of the micronutrients in the travel time or storage of their foods. Also, they're eating it wild. I mean, they're eating wild fish if they're getting it. There's not, yeah. there's no factory farm out there. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, it also has more great ingredients, great micronutrients. There's also no pesticides. There's no GMOs. These are things they've never heard of.
Yeah.
And then physical activity, they have a real sense of community there. And everything is done as a group, supporting each other. So they're all working for this one united goal. So one group will be going out and picking things, and one group will be making the baskets to give to the fisher people so the fish people can go out and get the fish to come in. And it's just a real community experience. And it was really amazing because, you know, a lot of the foods that we look at here that we would never want to eat mm-hmm. are really some of the most nutrient-rich foods available to these people.
Like eyeballs and things like that.
Sure.
And yeah, yeah. bits and pieces, parts, and critters.
Yeah,
yeah, and they really respect the animal too. That's another thing that I think, again, we've kind of lost our relationship with food,
yeah.
You know, in the modern societies. We're very disconnected with it. But over there, of course, you know, and all around the world in these remote areas, they're very connected to it. It's their soil. It's their gardens. It's mm-hmm. their food. It's, you know, it's the animals that live in their forests and in their rivers. And they're very proud of that. And so there's a real respect for the animals and the food itself. And there's a real ceremony that goes along with eating, and you know, and they benefit health-wise because of this.
You must come back just changed people from an experience like that. How do you incorporate those, I guess, mental games into this modern world?
Well, this is the reason why we wrote Naked Calories. You know, we want to start some kind of an awakening in America and say, like, first of all, people, we need to understand what a micronutrient is. When we first started to write this book, our publishers were saying to us, listen, you're never going to be able to use the word micronutrient because, yeah. first of all, no one knows what it is. So that kind of put a wrench in everything at the beginning. We said, no way. We're going to talk about what a micronutrient is.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about, you know, what's causing disease in this country. And we really want to start something where people start to respect food again and move back to that process of understanding how it is that eating foods that are naturally raised and naturally fed and respected and can really enhance our health. People need to have that connection between you are what you eat. We say it all the time. Mm-hmm. We don't really understand it.
Right. And that raises another interesting point that I've heard you folks talk about before, which is when you look at an apple today, that's vastly different than what our parents ate or what our grandparents ate. So what's changed?
Well, because it was grown in our soil, a lot has changed. Due to the over-farming, the soil is very depleted now. Mm-hmm. And so whereas we used to be able to say that we can get all our nutrients from our food, and maybe there was a time when their soil was so rich, like these people that we saw in the islands and in these remote places, they really can gain enough nutrition. Right. However, if you look at the apple of today in comparison to an apple of 80 years ago, it has lost 96% of its iron, wow, 82% of its magnesium, almost 50% of its calcium, over 80% of its phosphorus, and it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
So we're eating things that look like they're full and bursting with freshness, but they've been picked weeks early, mm-hmm, sent on a truck from another country or across the country, and basically it's been bumped, it's been bruised, it's been irradiated, whatever they've done, but trying to keep this thing looking beautiful. And because it was picked early, it didn't even get what the soil could have offered it, which is, yeah, why we say obviously to pick and get things local, because they allow it to actually ripen before it's fed you right afterwards.
Right. I remember this has happened to me a few times, and it is awful. So I have to travel sometimes for speaking engagements and that sort of thing. And you just want to grab some sort of food in the airport because you're starving. So I tend to grab an apple or something like that. And it looks great on the outside. Then you bite into it and it's rotten. Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, it's so gross. It tastes like water. There's no flavor to it.
Yeah. Or even worse, it's been like, wow, I've bitten into mold before, like,
oh,
on the
my
inside
goodness
of the core. It's just, it's miserable. And it's not rare anymore. It's getting worse.
Yes. Yeah, the food quality has become to the point now where other countries actually don't like eating here in America. We can't, mm-hmm, even send our meats over to other countries because they're not willing to even buy it, which is really sad that it we is spend less money on our food in this country than any other country.
Well, maybe that's an issue. We're not really buying real food, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. People spend months trying to buy a car and they're kicking the tires. They're taking it for a test drive. They're making sure, but who goes to the farm? I mean, I know some of us and a lot of paleos go to the farm.
Sure.
We applaud everyone for that. But really, people need to know where they're getting their food. It's at least worth a drive on a Sunday afternoon. Go, mm-hmm, meet the farmer.
So how can you, in today's world, in America at least, how can you maximize the amount of nutrients that you're getting out of your food?
Right. So a lot of people, and we'll warn people now, when you start reading the book, and I'm sure you saw this, Abel, when you get through, you know, chapters 4 or 5, it becomes very, you know, the realization hits you that, yeah, holy mackerel, you know, but we offer a solution. You know, well, that was the most important thing, was we wanted to make people aware what the problem was. We have to stop burying our heads in the sand and just say, well, you know, if I don't think about it, it'll just go away, because it's not going to go away. One day the doctor's going to be, it's going to be you on that table in the doctor's office, and, you know, instead of Mira, and it's going to be, you know, maybe not osteoporosis, but maybe it's high blood pressure, or maybe you're pre-diabetic, or maybe now you have heart disease, God forbid, you know? So what we need to do now is think about preventative medicine. And the only person that can do that for you isn't your doctor. It's you. With right, everything you stick into your mouth, that's preventative medicine, no matter what dietary philosophy. So we have created something called the Nutrivore. And the Nutrivore is our way of trying to just kind of combine and create kind of a group of people, a round table of saying, you know what, you might be a vegan, you might be a vegetarian, you might be a paleo, you might be a low carb. But one thing we all have in common is it doesn't really matter what our dietary philosophy is. What really matters is the food that we choose to eat.
Yeah.
That has the most micronutrient dense, is the most micronutrient dense. So we came up with a 3-point system. First and foremost, and you know, we want to make sure that everybody understands this. We believe food is the best way to get your essential micronutrients. We do not believe that there may ever be a supplement that would come anywhere near what food is. So that's always our first thing. The second is talking about lifestyle habits. We need to understand how it is that exercise, over-the-counter prescription and over-the-counter and prescription medications, pollution, alcohol consumption. I mean, you name it, all these different lifestyle habits, we have to add that to our equation mm-hmm. when we're trying to add up, okay, have I gotten all of the essential micronutrients my body needs today to do the job it needs to do to protect me from disease in the future? Mm-hmm. And of course, the last thing we recommend for people like us and like you, as you've said, as we travel, we go on the road, we're in the airplanes, we're in the hotels, you know, we can't always make those perfect choices, even mm-hmm. if we're at home sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we highly recommend a properly formulated multivitamin to fill in the gaps between where our good diet leaves off and where micronutrient sufficiency is established.
Right. And so that's another point where, and I mentioned this in my book, you're not just what you eat, you're also what you metabolize and what you absorb. And you guys talk about this too. There are so many different multivitamins and various fat burners and pills you can put in your body and magic potions. How do you know that you're actually absorbing it and that it's working?
Well, you know, that's a good question because, I mean, Consumer Reports just did a study. They took the top multivitamins on the market. They studied them to see if they even disintegrate. I mean, this is the first step, right? I mean, if it's not disintegrating, you can't release the micronutrients to our body and we can't absorb it. And they found that 51% of the name brand multivitamins that they studied didn't disintegrate.
Wow.
So right off the bat, you've got a 50-50 shot of it even getting into your system.
Yeah.
And then there's something else we talk about in the book, and we're really one of the first people to talk about this, although, I mean, you can go to any pharmacist, you know, in any drugstore, and they're, you know, they've been taught about micronutrient interactions or competitions, mm-hmm. but we're not talking about it when it comes to the multivitamin.
Yeah.
And it's surprising to me, you know, when we look at how the multivitamin is formulated today, it's much like the original prototypes from, you know, 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah.
They get a company, they throw a bunch of essential micronutrients together in a pill, they press it together or stick it in some kind of a caplet, and they say, there you go. That should do it for you. Go ahead, take it and, you know.
See what happens.
See what happens. Close your eyes and cross your fingers and maybe it's going to work.
Yeah.
But the problem is each one of these essential micronutrients have what's called micronutrient competitions. These are natural competitions. These are natural competitions that kept foods like cod liver oil, you know, from too much vitamin A becoming toxic in our bodies because it competes in the receptor sites for vitamin D. So mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with competition in food because food used to have so many micronutrients. These competitions were like safeguards for us.
Right.
But now that the food has been stripped, and we certainly don't want to have these competitions in our multivitamins because we're taking a multivitamin for one reason only. Our food hasn't been able to deliver to us the essential micronutrients. So the most important thing is that the vitamin we do take has eliminated these competitions as much as possible so that we have the greatest chance of absorbing those micronutrients.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point, too. It kind of reminds me of how sugar and fructose specifically is toxic. But when you eat an apple, it's bundled with the fiber, so your body can handle it. But when you have high fructose corn syrup, it cannot. Your body's like, what is this?
Exactly.
And so there are also, you know, with foods, cofactors and that sort of thing. So not to harp on the supplementation thing, but it is a bit controversial in the real food community. But it certainly beats, you know, eating soil.
Right. Again, we want to just say that a supplement is that. It's a mm-hmm. supplement. You know, I understand the concept of the whole food supplements and, you know, we respect everyone's opinion, but what we have to think is if it's whole food, you're better off eating the whole food.
Right.
You know, that whole food supplement is not going to have the enzymes and all the phytonutrients. I mean, there's nutrients we haven't even discovered yet.
Sure.
So we say, get everything you can from whole food. That's the best way to go. If you're going to take a supplement, then there's nothing wrong with a whole food supplement, but more important than where the vitamins come from, perhaps, mm-hmm. is being able to absorb the vitamins. Because science has shown that, you know, of course, you're always going to want to use whole food supplements as much as possible, but there are a few of the micronutrients that synthetically are created, and science has shown that those absorb and they can help to prevent and reverse disease in some cases just as well as a whole food.
Interesting. So which ones are those specifically?
Well, I mean, you know, we're looking at like with vitamin D. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, these are going to be things that, you know, obviously your best bet is going to be to get this from the sun, but we're all pretty much deficient in vitamin D.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at, you know, do we want to take a supplement? Sure. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I mean, B12, that's another one. B12 is only created from bacteria. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not going to get a whole food supplement. with B12. So, and also methylcobalamin is the way to go on that. Not the cyanocobalamin, because cyanocobalamin is not found anywhere in nature. So you're going to want to get you're going to want to get that B12 source from the bacteria that is the one that your body can utilize. And we go into a lot of this in the book.
Right, right. Like for the average person looking at a shelf, how do you know which supplement you can actually trust and which one you can't, and whether you should drink it or eat it or?
Well, the first step I would probably say is that we created something called the ABCs of optimal supplementation guidelines. A, absorption. Like Jason was saying, most things don't disintegrate. And actually, pharmacists, I'll report that you should have things in aqueous solution, that things delivered in water actually absorb far better than pills do. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people have been trying to do this pre-coating thing where it's time released and certain micronutrients will not compete because they have coded one to release it at a different time. The problem is once you put that into your body, they say as it dissolves going through your system, and yes, it's time released, but it might have missed its time that it was supposed to absorb. So it's actually not doing its job properly.
Yeah.
So we talk about that. That would be A for absorption. B, beneficial quantities. Most multivitamins don't put the heavy minerals in there.
Yeah.
Calcium, almost never at high enough quantities because it's a heavy and it's large and it just wouldn't fit into a pill very comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
Magnesium's another one. Also, a lot of things are water soluble.
Yeah.
So we say that, basically you better be taking something every 12 hours rather than once a day because, well, there's a good joke, and there's actually a reporter in the USA Today said that when the discovery that vitamin C was water soluble came about, he said it basically, if you're only going to take a one a day, it's basically like wearing a condom half the time.
Yeah.
Kind of potluck there. So, yeah, that's sort of another thing you got to be careful about is those water soluble. So that's beneficial quantities. And then also C for the competitions. You want to make sure that your multivitamin has something called anti-competition technology, that they've separated them. We like comparing them to there's a battle going on in your multivitamin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the Democrats and the Republicans. Only one person is going to win this thing.
Yeah.
And that's very timely right now.
It is.
But we like saying that just like that, there's only one micronutrient if there's a competing factor in that same multivitamin.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to separate them out like two really bad kids because that's the only way they're going to stop fighting.
Right.
So that's another thing with competition. And synergy is the opposite of competition, which basically some help each other absorb better. Some are necessary for utilization of the other. Mm-hmm. There's some are like a team of football players. They need all of the members. So those are the four things, and we really have a checklist in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You can go through. It's also on our website, and people can look at it. And people can go on our website and take their multivitamin label, and there's a stack-up quiz in the Discovery Center, and they can actually bring their label to the thing, and it's like 10 questions, 12 questions.
Yeah.
And it actually, they can plug the numbers in and see how it stacks up to the ABCs.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And speaking of your website, I went on it last night, and took the quiz, and I was just barely shy of the optimal health zone, probably because
yes.
I'm a coffee fiend, smoke cigars, fast sometimes, and exercise quite a bit.
But you supplement, right? So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's
there
true.
There you go.
But how many Americans would you say are deficient?
I'd say 100%.
Yeah.
I'd say 100%. I mean, I think us nutritionists, we kind of didn't dally around that number. You know, you hear Oz say 99, and Heyman will say, 94, and, everybody. But you know what? In all reality, there's just, we're 100%. And now we're not saying that, we're all in dire
sure.
deficiencies. Although,
most
when you look at the obesity rates and the heart disease rates and the cancer rates, certainly those are indicative of how deficient we are as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
But, the vast, I would say probably at least half of Americans are just slightly deficient in their essential micronutrients, and they could easily improve. And then those who aren't, they really need to start looking at this and start understanding that, when, the doctor sends you home and says you need to eat healthier, it doesn't mean going and getting a bunch of boxed foods and, diet this and process that. It means really going back and trying to understand what food is and trying to eat as much natural whole food as possible.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things that you folks touch on, speaking of, weight loss and that sort of thing, is the relationship between cravings and micronutrient deficiencies. So tell us a little bit about that and how that works.
Well, a lot of times people don't know why they go off a diet or why they fail. Mm-hmm. But the real fact of the matter is that diets fail because, well, not only do we get sick of eating the specific things, but our body is craving certain things. We talk about in the book, there's two types of hunger. There's one that makes your stomach rumble, and that's the regular hunger, the obvious hunger we're all familiar with. But then there's also the hidden hunger, which is micronutrient deficiency. And when we are deficient in a specific micronutrient, our body tries telling us in the only way it can, by telling us to eat. It is trying to give us a message that we need specific foods. So, for example, a lot of people tend to overeat their sweets. They're either craving sweets or they're craving salty foods. And the whole thing is, it's kind of like a dog chasing his tail. We call it the crave cycle. because the more you eat of it, the worse it gets.
Yeah.
So, for example, if you're craving salty foods, like you need chips and stuff like that, chances are that you have a deficiency of calcium. And when you eat something like that, you don't really get in the calcium, so then your body leaches more calcium out. Mm-hmm. So that makes you more deficient. So it's this chronic cycle. And also, people who crave sweet things are generally deficient in magnesium. People who can't taste food, on the other hand, which is a lot of older Americans, are generally deficient in zinc. So that's another reason people just keep eating. But over and over again, there's examples of all these specific micronutrients that can really cause somebody to gain weight. I mean, vitamin D, this is a crazy one. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D, if you're vitamin D deficient, you have a likelihood of being 16.3 pounds greater in weight, overweight, 16.3 pounds more than somebody who's vitamin D sufficient.
That is just wacky.
I know, one micronutrient can make that much of a difference.
So, I mean, if you can bundle that up and market it as a fat burner on some new internet scam, you could probably make a quick
The fact of the matter is, our essential micronutrients are designed to have our bodies run efficiently. That's metabolism. That's our body's ability to utilize fats. And so, you know, what are we really looking for in a fat burner? Really, what we want is we want our bodies to work as they should.
Right.
We don't need a fat burner.
We need
something that's going to allow our bodies to work efficiently, and we don't have to worry about accumulating fat then at that point.
Right. And one of the things I advise my readers and my clients to do is eat a wide diversity of foods for a number of reasons. But could you help explain why that's a good idea?
Well, think of it like, you know, the foods themselves provide a certain amount, a certain spectrum of micronutrients. So the wider variety that you eat, the grander your spectrum is going to be. And remember, each one of those essential micronutrients is necessary in order for your body to run and produce for you optimal health. So the wider variety of foods you eat, the more likelihood that you're going to get some of the different micronutrients that, you know, aren't found maybe in the 10 or 15 typical things you eat every day. So the wider variety you can choose, the better off you're going to be as far as at least getting some of those micronutrients. You know, we also have to think about how many micronutrients we're getting, but at least this way, the body has something to work with.
Yeah. What you touched on before, I really loved when you guys talked about this. Dieting, I have a few articles and videos about how traditional dieting seems to work, but usually doesn't long-term. And in fact, it often backfires, so that eat less, exercise more doesn't really work long-term. And also, what I really loved about what you guys talked about is how exercise actually starts burning micronutrients. So how does that happen, and what can you do about it?
Right. So, I mean, what have we been doing in America the last 30, 40 years? I mean, we've been this mantra of eat less, exercise more. I mean, I see it everywhere. And I often wonder, I mean, haven't you been here for the last 40 years? Haven't you seen the obesity rate skyrocket? This does not work.
Right.
Stop, please. Don't stop eating less and exercising more. This is creating more micronutrient deficiencies. I mean, how many times do we have to see a Gatorade commercial to realize that as we sweat and as we exercise, we're burning electrolytes? Electrolytes are micronutrients too, right? So muscle contraction, we need calcium. If you work out for more than 6 hours a week, you're probably going to be deficient in iron. The body uses zinc. It uses magnesium. It uses all those micronutrients when we exercise. Mm-hmm. So the last thing we want to do is restrict the food. Remember, micronutrients is where food is found.
Yeah.
So restricting food restricts micronutrients, and then burning more with exercise, meaning we're putting stressors on our body, creating more free radicals, more need for these antioxidants. Antioxidants are micronutrients. So this whole micronutrient deficiency scam that we've been all kind of been pushed upon us with this eat less, exercise more has been creating deep, deep micronutrient deficiencies in people. These deficiencies have been causing food cravings and causing our bodies to send us the signals of, hey, you better continue to eat more food because the micronutrients that are supposed to be in those foods that you're eating, the calories are there, but the micronutrients aren't anymore. And so we continue to eat and eat and eat. And what, like Mira said, the number one reason we fail on our diets is because one day we get to that spot and we need that donut or we need that plate of pasta or whatever craving is in our mind overtakes our physical ability to stop it. Yeah. And then we fall off. And that's what's continuously happening in America. Mm-hmm. We believe that dieting is actually causing deficiencies, which is causing the obesity epidemic.
Right. Yeah. And it absolutely makes sense, especially once you read your book. One thing I'd be really interested in hearing you guys talk about, and because I have readers who are from the paleo camp, bodybuilding, and as far as meal frequency goes, they're completely on opposite spectrums, and I'm caught somewhere in the middle, you know, where the bodybuilders are just like, you need to eat every 3 hours, and then some of the paleo folks are just like, well, you don't need to eat for 2 days. What did you see when you went around the world in terms of health and meal frequency?
Well, listen, that's a great question because, you know, back a couple lifetimes ago, I used to be a bodybuilder. I'm great friends with Dorian Yates. I trained with him and so he's, you know, he was kind of inspiration for me. And, I had this exact same question. Are we supposed to eat the 5-6 times a day, which theoretically is supposed to speed up the metabolism, or would we be better off eating less times? And when I looked into the research, you know, 15 years ago or so, because EAS was a big proponent back then of, you know, in their magazine pushing, you know, the multiple times during the day, 5 times, 6 times, according to the research I saw at that time, metabolism is actually increased with a 3-time-a-day meal plan over the 5 or 6. Now, again, that's not my research. It's what I had found at that time period. When we traveled around the world, this is what we found. People basically ate in the morning. They would kind of snack on something small in the afternoon, and then they'd eat again at night. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, that, you know, they certainly weren't out there looking at their, well, you know, what sundials and, you know, saying, oh, 3 hours, let's go. But at the same time, if they're walking along on a hunt and they see something to grab, you know, they'll grab it and eat it.
A lot of times it kind of looked like feast or famine in a way, not that we went to a lot of places that were starving, but you'd see, you know, they'd go out and fish and there'd be a lot of fish brought back.
Yeah.
And then you'd see people eating a lot. And then probably, you know, if they can catch anything, they don't need to eat so much.
Yeah.
Protein especially was one of those things that would sometimes be really high and sometimes be really low. And that was really based on the hunting, the gathering, I mean, whatever they had that was available to them. I mean, a lot of them had, you know, one pig that they were going to, you know, raise and then kill. And they were all going to share it for a while in the entire community. And then they had to wait till another pig was big enough.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something that was always available.
And what we also found is really a lot of these remote tribes were eating, you know, not so much in a theory, like so many of us today will look at a theory, one of these dietary philosophies, and then we're like, that's it. That's for me. This is the way that I'm going to eat. But these individuals didn't do that. They had to eat based on what the season, what the world gave them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, while they're eating, you know, tons of, you know, fish with a little bit of vegetables, but from whatever they planted on the riverside, you know, today, when that river floods and those foods are gone, that diet changes drastically based on what nature has, what allows them to eat. So a lot of, you know, the dietary, there's no place we went to and said, well, this is our philosophy of eating, you know, that food over there, we're not going to touch that food. That's just going to sit there. It doesn't work like that. Not in these communities.
Yeah. It's so funny how backwards we have it, right? So they had to eat seasonally, which is the best thing that you can do. And here, you know, we just have, you walk into Walmart in the produce section and you can find anything you want, star fruit all year long. And not that we don't think of food seasonally. Sometimes we do. I mean, you ask most people if a pumpkin is seasonal, they'd be like, yeah, you know, you have that in October or whatever because of the holidays. But it's not just those specific things. It's nuts and fish and even meats. Like everything is seasonal.
Absolutely. I mean, even think about butter. I mean, mm-hmm. if you want grass-fed butter with all that CLA in it, you're going to want that first round of milk after that the cow has been grazing on that fresh, young grass.
Right.
Probably not going to find that in Alaska. Not a lot of grass.
Yeah. When I was in Alaska, I did have some great meat and fish, but I certainly did not have a great salad.
No. Right. Up there. And it all tastes so different. I mean, that's the thing you get used to also. You know, when you're living in Europe or even in the modern cities in Europe, they still go to the market mm-hmm. almost every day to buy whatever is they're going to make for dinner.
Yeah.
Well, people here just would think that's insane to take a bike, to go to a market, to buy your stuff for dinner. That doesn't happen here.
Right.
It explains why they're a lot healthier. Also, they're not afraid of certain fats that we're afraid of here. That, well, we're not personally afraid of here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it was so nice to go to a place where we'd have a lot of duck fat on everything.
Yeah, and that's good stuff.
Everything tasted fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It is funny how we're so afraid of some of the things that are best for us, like organ meats and that sort of thing. Like I had some liver and onions the other night, pasture raised, of course, and all organic and loco and that sort of thing. And after I ate it, I just felt terrific.
Yeah. I'll tell you what we should be afraid of in this country. We should be afraid of any food that we as man have touched. You don't need to be afraid of any natural food.
Mm-hmm.
Period. I mean, what in the world? I mean, that is
unless you're in the Amazon. Well, some things are poisonous.
Poison, yes. Poison. Watch out for those. But you know, I mean, it's when we start to play around with the genetically modifying these things or taking our animals and start feeding it diets that are absolutely not natural for them, then their bodies start to rebel like they should be doing. We have to stay natural. And, you know, that's what we really have to be thinking about in this country is really getting away from these. I mean, look at the grocery stores. You walk in today and it's every single time I walk in there, the natural foods are being pushed out in more boxes and more bottles and more cans and more bags are on the shelf.
And more people in those wheelchair carts to go with it.
That's true, isn't it? As far as eating natural foods goes, one of the things that that I'm really interested in and I think we're losing sight of is the tradition that goes around properly preparing food. What did you see as when you went to different parts of the world as far as those traditions go and that overlapping with getting the most nutrients out of your food?
Yeah, I mean, it goes so far as to say that when we were in the Amazon, we remember we were eating this one food, which is like a staple. And we said, well, you know, we asked the guide, what is this? Manioc. And I said, okay, so what's it from? He said, well, there's a funny story. You have to take it out, peel it. I think you have to like boil it, bury it four times you die. And I'm like, and we're afraid to like to soak our grains.
Yeah.
But it's so amazing because they really do have these traditions. They realize what has to be done to the foods and how to maintain the foods. And some of it came out of just trying to conserve the foods
mm-hmm.
during other periods, like a lot of the, you know, some of the fermenting and stuff like that. But they really do still pay attention to how the food is prepared in order to make it healthiest for the human body.
Mm-hmm. And we've completely lost sight of that. People are just like, oh, I need to put my beans on the counter overnight? There's no way.
Microwave!
Yeah.
Yeah, the fastest method is what we kind of learn here.
Yeah, and we really should. I mean, you bring up another great point. We need to slow down and we need to think maybe it will take us a little bit longer and it may take a little bit more time to prepare our foods correctly. Mm-hmm. But this is, again, I can't stress enough, this is your insurance policy.
Yeah.
If you're just going to wait around to you get one of these chronic diseases and then go cry about it, you know, and get on medication and deplete yourself even more, well, I mean, then you're just a helpless victim.
Yeah.
We need to start thinking about that. What we're doing today, we invest your time in your own health and in your family's health. It's going to be the most important thing you do moving forward.
Yeah. It's frustrating how few people want to spend any money at all on food. You know, they're just like, well, if I can get a loaf of bread for $1, then why would I spend $5 on a loaf of bread? And, you know, I would say, personally, don't buy the bread at all. But the point the point is that when you actually spend a little bit more, you actually buy real food.
You spend a little more, but you get a lot more.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And that's the difference.
Yeah, and I can say that since I started eating this way a few years ago, I haven't been to the doctor because I was sick ever, you know? Awesome. And it's just like, you know, what's expensive is going to the hospital or something if you don't have insurance, right?
Absolutely.
Or getting a chronic disease. And that adds up pretty quick.
Yeah.
If people can combine, you know, a great dietary philosophy with micronutrient sufficiency, they've got the recipe for success. I mean, if they can keep their bodies sufficient, I mean, think about that. All you need to do is provide the essential micronutrients. They're called essential because they are essential. So you can't do without them. So over a period of time, if we continue to just disregard this, then we're going to get these diseases.
Yeah.
You know, when we were in Papua New Guinea, we were and in India, we would meet these men and women along like the Sepik River there in Papua New Guinea or in different places in India. And we'd talk to them. And you can see some of the pictures of these people in our book. And they're, you know, 60, 70, 80, some of them over 100 years old. Yeah. And literally, you'd look at some of these guys who are in their 70s. And that you would never think that they were over 45.
they could probably beat you up, right?
little bodybuilders running around. I'm like, holy mackerel, what am I doing wrong?
It's so funny. But yeah, we can really learn something from that. I hope we do.
I'd love hearing your story too. You know, I mean, I think that a lot of people start at that same spot. You know, they start to think about, wow, you know, what's happening to me? And then they start to discover and don't you think that it comes on very, very quickly. Once you kind of start to realize what the real answer is and you eat those foods, your body changes so quickly that it's pretty evident that that's the right way to go.
Yeah, and it's effortless too. You know, what happened with me is I had been trying to be healthy my whole life. My mom was into, you know, holistic medicine, and I grew up in the backwoods of New Hampshire. So eating local and that sort of thing was always something that we tried to do, but I was very much on the bandwagon of low fat and eating lots of soy. I was a vegetarian for a while. And my body, I just had all of these kind of nagging issues. They weren't health problems really, but my body temperature was about 96 degrees. So my thyroid was hugely underactive. It takes courage, I guess, to go against that, because it's everything that your doctor tells you, right? It's everything that society tells you to eat low fat, exercise a lot, and do all these things. Meanwhile, I had all of these problems, high blood pressure, thyroid out of whack. When I started going against everything that they said, I lost 20 pounds in 40 days and I'd never felt better. It was just crazy.
That's unbelievable.
We actually had a client who came to us, I mean, really severely obese. And she said, my doctor told me if I do what you say, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know what? You're not going to die. Obviously, we can't promise that. We're pretty sure you're not going to die.
Yeah.
And she didn't die. But just to scare people that much. I mean, when I go back for my bone densities, because I have to keep going back just to, you know, obviously stay strong, make sure and all everything's good. And also to rub it in their face. The doctor says to me every single time, I think you should go on Fosamax.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I haven't had it in 6 years.
Oh, man.
So yeah, I mean, the medical community is going to take some catching up, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
It's important for people like us and yourself and others who have made that change and to be able to go out, stand strong together. And, you know, people will then look and say, well, look at all these people. They can't be wrong, too, you know. And having like these events like you're having where people can come and listen and ask questions and really, you know, when we go to book signings, I'm amazed how many people walk in the front door and say, I'm just here to see you. If you're healthy, you look healthy, or if you look like some of these the medical doctors on television. Nothing against medical doctors. There are great medical doctors. There are bad nutritionists. There are great nutritionists. But some people who are perpetuating these alternative ways to stay healthy don't necessarily look very healthy themselves.
I know. Yeah.
And so they say, well, I want to see what you look like, because, you know, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah, it is. And it's amazing how many people overlook that fact. You know, the first thing that I do when I look at a book is turn it around and take a good hard look at the person on the back. Is this someone I want to look like?
You know? Right.
Are they overweight, or is their face saggy? A lot of times you can just look at someone's face and you can see how healthy or unhealthy they are. And of course, when you meet them in person, it's incredible how evident it is, even on an instinctual level. And one of the things when I got into this way of eating that I tried to use as a cue was, look at the people. It's easy for anyone who, you know, is younger, 20s, 30s, whatever, to look good, even if they're totally abusing their bodies. And maybe not easy for everyone, but it's a lot easier than, say, if you're 60. But you look at these guys like Art Devaney and Mark Sisson. You're like, what? These guys are monsters. How is that possible?
That's great.
They're just doing it right. You know?
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And then there's some doctors out there that we see on television that look emaciated and look like their skin's like so loose. And you're like, come on, why are you selling a diet? Go eat something. You know?
Yeah. I met one of these, you know, internet sensation dietary gurus a few months back. And it turns out he's fat. I met him. I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's true. I think we're in a good spot right now. I think in America, I think we're just starting to approach that number where we can get a tipping point. I think people, they've taken the blindfold off and they've realized that, listen, we're not going to do any more of this eat less, exercise more crap anymore. And we're going to start to look at nutrition as being the key to creating optimal health. Not saying that exercise isn't important, but you can't just exercise yourself healthy. I mean, the idea, and they're really perpetuating that a lot, exercise as medicine and all these studies showing, but they're forgetting the key component. If the more you exercise, the more important your diet becomes.
Yeah. I went to my doctor and my blood pressure, this was a while back, but my blood pressure went way down from an unhealthy level, almost hypertension to a super healthy level. And my doctor asked me what I did. And I said, I stopped running marathons and I started eating lots of fat.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. That's absolutely right. Fat. I mean, I always tell people if I could buy all the fat in the world, I would buy it all up because it's going to be the most precious commodity once people realize the importance of fat in the diet.
Well, look at Sweden and Norway. They're getting that message right now.
And eating like royalty. It's awesome stuff.
Yeah, we're there with you. I mean, that's what people were doing. I mean, they certainly, when we went out to these places where people were healthy, they certainly weren't shying away from the fat. I mean, they would eat the food as the food was created. They didn't, go and say, well, we don't need this piece. We don't need this piece. They didn't pretend they were smarter than nature. I mean, nature, I think is pretty wise. And if we can follow nature, I think we'll do a lot better than following some of these people, like you say. And then you look at them and it's like,
what happened there?
Are we following you?
So before we wrap up, what's the most essential change that you can see that folks in America could do to improve their health?
Become aware of micronutrients. Become aware that that is the reason you're eating. And someone says, if you look at it, quit, ask yourself, are there any nutrients left in this thing before I put it in my mouth? Mm-hmm. Because that's going to really make that mind change. You're going to change your mindset by doing that. And you'll start searching out those higher quality foods. And once you start doing it, you feel better. And you'll really continue on that as a lifestyle.
Yeah. I mean, I say keep learning. Really dig into things. Listen, listen to people like us and other people. And if things start to, in like yourself, of course, Abel. And if things start to ring a bell inside you, go and do some research on it. Educate yourself about what nutrition really is all about and the history of nutrition. Yeah. Don't just take what you see people on the television telling you at face value. A low fat boxed processed diet is not going to create health, and I don't care what they say. Mm-hmm. So start to educate yourself. Look at the people who are successful out there in health, and this is going to be, I'm talking about societies in general. And then try to use your common sense.
Yeah.
A food, innately, we know what's right and what's wrong in food. We'll look at it. We like to pretend to ourselves that, that eating a low-fat pizza is a good way to go, or eating, some kind of a brownie delight is a great diet food. But in all reality, we know they're not.
Yeah. Eat real food.
Right. Real food. Become micronutrient sufficient. Get that word in your vocabulary. We should be using the word micronutrient a lot more than we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really should. It's from all the research I've looked at, it is huge and definitely underrated at this point, but I think that'll be changing. And hopefully your book, I think it's already helping to do that. So all you folks out there, please go check out Naked Calories. It's a great read and I highly recommend it. Tamira and Jason, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
It's been fun.
Yeah. It has been fun. Let's do it again.
Yeah. That was.
Maybe a scene in Austin.
That sounds great. Come hang out.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Thank you again.
It was a real pleasure.
It was. Yes. Best of luck. Talk to you guys soon.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Hey, that was a heck of a lot of fun. This is Abel James signing off. Make sure you guys all check out Naked Calories. It's a great read, and I'll be talking to you soon. Cheers.